Tax season has arrived, and doing taxes without the right help can feel overwhelming. Intuit TurboTax is here now to guide you through it with confidence. Match with a TurboTax full-service expert who handles everything for you from start to finish. Your dedicated expert checks every single deduction and credit to help you get the best possible outcome so you can feel confident you're getting every dollar you deserve. And the best part? You'll see real-time updates on your expert's progress right on your phone while you live your life. Plus, you get unlimited expert help at no extra cost, even on nights and weekends during tax season. Visit TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Full Service Experts. Real-time updates only on iOS mobile app.
Busted appliance? This is your sign to upgrade. Shop at Lowe's to get up to 35% off and next-day delivery on hundreds of major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 3/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Order by 4 p.m. Available Monday through Saturday. Subject to availability. Fees, exclusions, and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/appliance delivery for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
Hello, everybody. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. We're at war still. Day four, maybe it's day four. There's a lot to talk about with the war. We have so many reasons for going to war. And sometimes it's for freedom. Sometimes it's to take the oil. Sometimes it is to protect Israel. Sometimes it is to protect America. And sometimes it's to end a 47-year war. And also sometimes it's not even a war at all. It's amazing. And before we start, would either of you like to offer introductory thoughts as to this glorious war we are enjoying right now?
I've got some opening thoughts.
Hit me.
So, you know, I do think that there is, and we should just put this on the table right up front. There seems to be a question in the ether from people who don't want to grapple directly with Donald Trump's war in Iran that is specifically about us. Why don't these former neocons or potentially continuing neocons support automatically this war in Iran? And I'd like to just throw out a few reasons why.
Before you do, I did write an entire newsletter on Monday about all the ways it could work out just fine.
Yeah. The one neocon that has some thoughts.
Anyway, I didn't say those things were likely, but I did say
you never know.
It is possible that we could wind up in a better end state.
Sure. That's fine. I think it's worth, though, potentially just laying out why we might be skeptical of this war. And it's just a few things. I just have a short list. One, no congressional approval. Two, no case making to the American people, not in the State of the Union, not subsequently. Where we are getting our information currently is not from the White House or Oval Office addresses. It is from the president's private Truth Social account, which, by the way, he owns, which, by the way, is like a place. Yeah, like his private, it's a private business. That is where he is currently sharing with us this information.
Not a very profitable business, Sarah.
It might be because we keep getting conflicting reports from the president himself and the members of his administration about why we are doing this, as JVL noted. It might be because it does not appear that this was thought through from many of those statements, that we don't actually have a plan for what we're trying to achieve that is clear, certainly not one that has been made to the American people. It might be because of things like, I don't know, there's an internet blackout in Iran, and yet Trump is trying to call for the people there to sort of do an uprising. And yet, how are they going to do that? You know what we would do normally? We would use the Voice of America, our the national communications channel we had. But you know who runs that now? Carrie Lake. Carrie Lake runs that, and we've gutted it so it doesn't have the ability to do the work. So we also have an administration that lies about everything, like absolutely everything. They have bungled things like deporting immigrants to gulags in foreign countries. They've ignored courts. They've been bungling the economy. They've been tariffs come on, tariffs come off. There's a million reasons Why? Maybe it's because the negotiating is being done by Witkoff, famously in love with Putin, and the president's son-in-law, who's gotten billions from the Saudis. Maybe it's because this administration is incredibly corrupt. There's just a lot of reasons why a sentient person, even if they believe, as I do, that the Iranian regime is evil, even if they believe, as I do, that the Iranian people deserve their freedom, the idea that Trump sits in the Oval Office today after we have launched the war and sits there and says, yeah, maybe someone worse will come in or maybe somebody good. I don't know. Who could say?
People die. It happens in war.
All of this is not reassuring. Normal people should be skeptical that this administration is the right administration to be launching this.
I'd say
to be hostile.
Skeptical,
to the idea.
I think, would be the minimum.
Anyway,
yeah, I want to add
put
one
on the table.
Oh, yeah. I want to do one yes and to that, because I saw some other folks. It wasn't even really about the neocon thing. It was the sense that I don't understand how people who are critical of Trump and even Biden for not providing more military support to Ukraine could now be upset about this. And I was like, well, I can feel that one, actually. Ukraine was invaded by Russia, and they're a democratic ally in Europe, and they have an existing government that we know is an allied government that isn't perfect, but is generally a democracy, and, you know, in our community of nations, and we know the leader, and we can deal with them. And it's not great when another quasi power invades them. And it would be good to send a deterrent effect to other, you know, quasi superpowers that want to invade allied countries of ours. So, like, that is one scenario. This is another scenario where we have like a desiccated regime that had that was like basically spiraling, like the Iranian regime, at least in its power projection, that like did some terrorist actions. Of course, that's not good. We don't support those. We want to protect, obviously, our interests in the Middle East, but certainly any of their allies' interests. But like, they weren't planning on invading Jordan. They weren't planning on invading Israel any day. Like, it's not the same. It's not the same. We did it. We chose to go in there. So, and it's, and you know, I think to Sarah's point about like the lack of clarity about why, like, it is truly. Like, it's truly mind-boggling that I like, if you were not a if you're like not a news watcher, you know, I was hanging out with some of my non-news watching friends over the weekend, and somebody came up to me and goes, "Hey, what's been happening? I haven't read the news in weeks." So if you're like that guy that was at the horse races this weekend and hasn't read the news in weeks and is just, you know, mowing his lawn, parenting his children, going to work, checking in, checking out, like, why? You have no idea. Like, what? Like, we're bombing Iran. Why? Like, this was the opposite of what Trump ran on. And the whole thing is just totally preposterous in every way. And I think that, like, all of the caveats about the heinousness of Iran and whatever, you know, other geopolitical strategery, like, could be well taken hypothetically if it wasn't these clown fucks running this thing. And like, there's just no reason to give them, forget giving them the benefit of the doubt, like, just give them a single like inch of credibility, which we'll get into some of what they've been saying, like that there's no reason to take any of it seriously because they're just
lying. There are a bunch of threads I want to pull in here. Yep. One of which is the reaction within MAGA, where you have, on the whole, Will Sommer wrote a great piece for us on False Flag, that they're, you can see who the real apparatchiks are.
Yep.
By looking at how people are switching on this, right? The people are like, oh, no. When we said no more foreign wars, we meant no more foreign wars led by people other than Donald Trump. Donald Trump can live. Those are just Pravda. There's also the interesting question about popularity for this war. You guys did a great bulwark take last night, which you didn't even talk to me about. Nobody invited me. That's, you know, I love it when I wake up and I see videos of my two best friends partying without me. Super cool.
Okay. Please do it instead. Okay. This is something for a therapist.
You know,
seek therapy.
It's have a whole podcast without him. A whole podcast without him.
I know, and it bothers him.
It does not.
So there's that stuff. And there is then the Israel stuff. And the Israel stuff is the smallest component of this. I would like to start by offering a video for you. Let me just set this up in context. One of the things we have heard from administration sources over the last few days is that one of the rationales for the attack was that Israel was going to attack Iran, and then Iran was going to hit U.S. bases in retaliation. And so we had to join in the attack with Israel from the jump, which suggested maybe that the president was being led into the war by Israel. He was asked that question today.
Attack, if we didn't do it, they were...
Launch these strikes against Iran, did that help pull the United States into this war?
No, I might have forced their hand. You see, we were having negotiations with these lunatics, and it was my opinion that
they
were
going to attack.
You don't
even need to play the rest of it. This is the most Trumpian response. Like, honestly, if I had told you guys Trump's going to be asked this question, you both would have said, oh, here's how he'll respond to it, right? It's the perfect... This obvious thing has happened, and his response is, no, it didn't happen. Actually, the complete opposite of it happened. That's how strong I am.
But then the thing that you cut off there is what he's saying is, oh, we had these great negotiators. We didn't actually send anybody that can speak their language, by the way. We just sent Jared and his real estate buddy, Steve Witkoff. We had these great negotiators, and we came away convinced they were going to attack us. It's like, what? No, so nobody's told us that. So now we're in day four of the war, and the president for the first time is answering questions about it in the Oval Office, and he offers a wholly new theory, which is that our negotiators heard that Iran was about to attack us. Really? Where?
Big if true.
Yeah, where? I mean, certainly not on the homeland.
They have missiles that can reach us? Does Iran have missiles that can reach us?
But they're 2 weeks away from getting
new information.
Yeah,
brand new
information. 2 weeks away from ICBMs.
And so you're trying to tell me that 4 days into a war you started, you want to share with the American people that we are in imminent risk of an attack from Iran. That was what you guys had felt. I think Donald Trump said we felt that way. And that is the reason now, because we want to backtrack away from the Secretary of State and the Speaker of the House. Say what you want about them, but they shoot from the hip a little less than the president, you know, saying that, no, actually, the imminent threat was that if Israel attacked Iran, we had the sense that Iran would then retaliate, and that could include us. And so we had to preemptively attack to get ahead of Israel's attack on Iran. And it's nonsensical. And then for Trump to say, obviously we knew Trump was going to say this, but just it's important just to like just paint a picture of how ridiculous this is. The idea that Trump, who him and his vice president and his whole administration, like ran for re-election on the premise that they were not going to get into war.
Right.
He had an entire
you
first
vote
term.
For her. You're sending your sons to die in foreign wars.
He had an entire first term where he could have gone to war with Iran if he wanted to, if this has been a 47-year thing. Like, he had 4 years in that 47-year window where he could have done something about it. Didn't do it then. Ran on not doing it. Said he had no interest in doing it. And then you have Israel, run by Bibi, who for like 35 years has been saying we should take out the Iranian regime. And so Trump is now trying to tell us that it was him, the person who said he didn't want to do this his whole life, that was the one pushing Bibi, who has been wanting to do this for 35 years, into doing it. I mean, JBL, this would be like you trying to convince people that it was that, or me trying to convince people that it was you that really talked me into getting hammered one night at the bar.
Yes.
You know, it was my teetotaler friend that doesn't drink. And it was really JBL's fault. You know, it wasn't me. I've been itching for a shot ever since the podcast ended. But JVL really wanted us to do it, so we had to get hammered together. It's just silly.
So does this do anything for Trump in terms of his internal coalition management? Because one of the problems he has is one of the concerns I have seen expressed by some corners of the right, the ones who are a little more independent, is, holy crap, we're fighting Israel's war for them. Trump was led around by the Zionists, and now, like, does it help for him to say, no, actually, I'm the one who stampeded them into it. They're just helping me with my war.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it actually helps. I do think that's what he's trying to do, right? They recognize that one of the big vulnerabilities in the MAGA coalition in terms of the friendly fire they are getting from sort of the J.D. Vance wing of the party, our ship poster in chief is almost nowhere to be found, by the way. I think that that's, they think that if Trump says it, like Trump thinks, I can bring people on side. They'll get on side if they know this is coming from me and not Netanyahu. And also, Trump doesn't like he doesn't care probably that the criticism right. is that this is a bad war or anything else. What he can't stomach is the idea that he's not in charge, that he's not the big bad one dropping the bombs and that we're being led around by Israel.
That's an excellent point. So talk to me a little bit about the popularity stuff. So you guys got... looked at some Snap polling yesterday. It was not good. Can you just give like the 15-second version of that? And then I have some questions for you about casualties.
Tim, sure. You want to do it or you want me to?
Yeah, sure. The 15-second version is like the Democrats are united in opposition to this. So for starters, and you look at most polls, right. Like 7% of Democrats are for this. He's underwater big time with independents. You know, independents are looking at 19 to 25% supporting it. In all of these polls, there's a bunch of people who are kind of in wait and see mode. And then even among Republicans, it's not horrible right now. He's like in the 70s. He's usually in the 80s or 90s on supports or issues. So he's in the 70s of support for this attack among
bad
Republicans.
For him.
But bad for him, right? Right? And so overall, you're looking at, you know, it's like 39-50, 39-52. So it's bad. It's underwater. It's not, you know, horrific, but there are a lot of like real red flags for him, which is like when you ask a lot of the underlying questions, you know, do you want him to keep going? You know, only 20% of people all of a sudden are for that, right? You know, I don't have some of the numbers in front of me, but like the gist is the Republican numbers are pretty soft. And I think that you have a little bit of a rally around Trump effect among Trump's own voters. It's like, hey, trust in Trump. You know, our cult leader, Daddy Trump, nothing he does is bad, but you know, there is skepticism and there is concern in the underlying question. And I think, you know, if things get a lot worse, I think that, you know, there's some pretty clear signs in the polling that his numbers could drop precipitously.
Yeah. And this is so something you, hold on 1 second, Sarah, because I'm going to tee you up in a different direction. Something Bill said to you in your show yesterday, Tim, which I listened to. I try to listen to all of your shows.
I appreciate that.
Was that this is so Bill made a very good point that he could float. Trump could float down a few more points on Epstein or on immigration or on the economy. The place where he could actually have a bottom fall out is war. Right. That's a place where he could go from 75% approved to like 45 or 50% approve, which would be
with Republicans.
With Republicans, sorry, that's what I meant, with Republicans. And so that's a place where he risks losing the base for real. And so my question for you, Sarah, is, are casualties important for that? Like, what determines whether or not that happens? Is it 6 people died versus 25 people died versus 100 people died? Or is it the price of gas goes up? Or is it inflation sort of ticks up at the next Bureau of Labor Statistics report?
It could be those things. I think the biggest thing, though, is time. Like, if in 3 weeks we are still there, because I just want to go back to the polling for 1 second, because I think one of the most interesting things is where public support was on bombing Iran before we did it, right? Okay. The idea of going into Iran at all was around 21%, I believe, of people who just, right. as a general matter, are like, yes, anytime we get the opportunity, let's go bomb Iran. It's about 21%. It jumps to about 41%, so by about 20 points when Trump actually does it. So those are your high watermark people. Those are the people who like it just because Trump did it. And I think what's notable about that is that there's no bigger rally around the flag effect, either rally around Trump or rally around the flag, which normally happens, right? Normally when something like this happens, there is a bump just on the sheer, like, let's support whatever it is we're doing. We're in a high, like we're in a serious situation. Let's all be supportive. That's not coming for Trump. All you got is if this is his high watermark, then that means that only 41% are like, okay, and this is people who think it's going to be a smash and grab job, like the first bombing in Iran, like going in and getting Maduro, where they don't have to see the aftermath, right? And so the question, like for me, yes, if gas prices go up, which I think is a, by the way, like an extraordinarily high possibility that this causes gas, that oil to spike. Yeah. It causes the market to drop. That's right. Yeah, it's already happening. But like that part, it's really, for me, it's like how long it goes on. And if this is the kind of thing where you want to start talking about the Bush line or the W line or whatever we're calling it, that starts to happen as wars go on and people don't feel like Trump is just getting in and getting out. They feel like, oh no, we're stuck there. And so it's not even just about American casualties. It's every American base that gets bombed right now and people die. It's Americans getting stuck there. Like if you're in DC, one of the things you're hearing constantly is all the people who can't get out right now, who are in the hotels.
You're in Dubai
this goes to my earlier point about all of the things that clearly weren't planned for. There was no evacuation of the Americans that were in these places that were.
Well, we couldn't because there was an imminent threat. I mean, there were
It was any day. It was ticking time bombs, Sarah.
I mean, if you just think about Benghazi and what happened there and how they sort of dragged Hillary Clinton in and over put the killing of I'm sorry that I forget his name. I believe it was Chris, but the head of that embassy, that was like a real failure of security. Like imagine all the thousands, the many, many thousands of Americans who are currently stranded in the Middle East who are under active bombing right now because nobody in their home country did anything to warn them that this was happening.
Yeah, just a couple of thoughts on that. Christopher Stevens, it took me a second for it to come up with, too, who's got died in Benghazi. But I agree with Sarah that the time matters and like the actual impact back home, where it could be any of those things that you laid out, JVL. I do wonder how things are looked at differently now just because of the general war weariness and hostility to war in the public. Here's something. So this morning, our colleague Mark Hertling has a new book out with his journals from his time in the first Gulf War. And, you know, we were all kids. And I was like, I remember that, you know, being a pretty quick operation, you know, that we were relatively fast in and out, was successful without a lot of casualties. So then I searched this morning. I was like, how many people died in the first? How many American soldiers died? Do you know? Do you have any guess?
I don't. I want to say it was three digits.
Yeah, it was like 200, you know, a little under 200, right? Yeah. And like, that's a lot, right? And so, it made me kind of think about that differently. Like, at the time, I just think that there was, obviously, you're coming off of Vietnam, so there's still some more weariness there. But with the Middle East, there was, like, less of this, like, feeling among the public that, like, we're in this quagmire. And in, like, the grand scheme of things, they're out relatively quickly. And there's still kind of a lot of deaths for a war that didn't really do anything. I mean, Saddam stayed in power. We were protecting the Kuwait border.
Just to talk about ancient history, you do have to put that in the context of like ongoing terrorism in the region in recent years, because you'd had Khobar Towers and you'd had Marine barracks being blown up. And so like we had lost three digits worth of American service people a couple times in the region just to terrorism.
Sure. So anyway, so you compare that to now, I bring that up in the context of when your point about the casualty count, JV, I was like, is that what would do it to Trump? And it's kind of like, I wonder in this day and age, in this media environment, with this level of war weariness, with Trump having issues within his own coalition on this, like 180 or whatever it was, like casualties, I think would feel a lot differently now. I think that would feel like a lot to people.
Yeah. And just one other thing. So I said this, we were on back in like January and we were talking about the potential for something in Iran at that point. And one of the things I said was, I do think MAGA will tolerate Venezuela slightly differently than it would tolerate us doing something in Iran. And the reason is it's just in the Middle East. And it reminds them more directly of Iraq and Afghanistan, Middle East wars, endless wars. And I think that holds up pretty well. Like part of the reason this is different, to Tim's point, isn't just like war weariness in general, but specifically Middle East wars. Like this is where Americans have a fresh memory of quagmires. Like they do have an intuitive sense that this stuff can get away from you pretty quickly. And there's a lot of Americans who remember. And this is, again, why I go back to people who are like, don't those neocons want this, whatever? Like, we've all learned a little bit since then, right? We've all seen a lot. And I think that part of that makes us have additional skepticism of what this could bring without feeling like it's really well thought out and necessary, which is the exact opposite of what we're getting from
this administration. We're also in month 8. Like, I was like, really? You think about it that way, right? So, JD, that old clip was going on of JD from Meet the Press, where JD's like, American people can feel good about this action the last time we bombed Iranian nuclear facilities because Trump isn't like one of those stupid presidents from the past,
right?
Like we're going to get in, we're going to get out, it's going to be fast. And it's funny to see that clip go back around now because that was 8 months ago. It's like, we're not real. In the grand scope of things, like the Iran project has not really been a 4-day project. We're already in month 8, and they're telling us we've got 4 more weeks. We'll see how that turns out.
Well, I actually feel like Trump has a superpower here that's going to let him escape this being a quagmire. But we'll get to that in a minute. First, message from our sponsor, Green Chef. Anyone annoyed with misleading healthy meals? Healthy. Tired of locking in for another New Year's trend? Green Chef cuts through the noise as the trusted authority on clean eating, delivering only real farm-sourced ingredients. Trust every bite with over 40 clean, customizable weekly recipes designed to give you peace of mind. Every Green Chef box delivers certified organic produce and responsibly sourced proteins and seafood. That means avoiding ultra-processed fillers. You can reach your wellness goals with options like Mediterranean, high protein, high fiber, plant-based, and more, all clinically proven to support healthier habits. And you take control of your health without the stress. Let them do the research, the meal planning, the grocery shopping, and then you enjoy low prep, low mess meals for every lifestyle. You've heard me talk about the roasted chicken with lemon crema before. That's because it really is good. And the results with my family have been exceptional. It's a hit every time. Head to greenchef.com/50nextlevel and use code 50nextlevel to get 50% off your first month, then 20% off for 2 months with free shipping. That's code 50NEXTLEVEL at greenchef.com/50NEXTLEVEL. So here's why I think that Trump has the ability to avoid any real problems. And it is because unlike anyone who has ever been president in any of our lifetimes, he has the ability to turn on a dime and walk completely away and it doesn't matter to him what gets left behind. And as exhibit A for this, I would present Venezuela. And, you know, we went down to Venezuela. We abducted the president of Venezuela. We just handed the baton over to his vice president. She's just as corrupt as he was. Nobody's freer down there. Nothing's changed except for one thing. And that is, if we can have the video of the president talking about the oil today.
And we have Delcy, who's been very good. We have the whole chain of command, and they've been, you know, look, the relationship's been great. We've taken out 100 million barrels of oil already, and a big part of that goes to them, and a big part goes to us. And it's been great. We paid for the war many times over, and we're going to be running the oil. And Venezuela is going to make more money than they ever made. And that's great for the people. The relationship has been great. It's been
Yeah. So he can just walk at any time and declare victory and say, see, everything's great. And it doesn't matter. Like, if Iran turns into a failed state because it's ungovernable and terrorism starts spilling over the borders into Saudi Arabia or Pakistan, which, by the way, nobody's really paying attention to this, but Pakistan and Afghanistan are now shooting at one another. Like, this is a real thing that's happening.
We stopped that. I'm sorry. No, that's incorrect.
Oh, sorry.
That's on the
I mean, list. Pakistan is a nuclear power. If a nuclear power like Pakistan were to destabilize, kind of bad, not good. Trump does not in any... There is no corner of his life in which Trump has ever adhered to, you break it, you bought it. And he can simply just walk on this thing. Like, he could, but the reason we're doing this live is because he could walk on this war before, you know, between the end of us taping and the editing being finished and this thing being pushed out onto YouTube.
Maybe. I'm not sure I agree with that. I mean, I agree with you that Trump doesn't care right? That Trump, that part I really agree with, this idea that Trump will do sort of whatever makes the most sense for him and maybe Netanyahu. The problem is, and this is something General Hertling said the first time we went live, when the day that this started happening, which he says, in a war like this, your enemy gets a vote. And that is like, Trump's going to have a lot harder time walking away from this. Like what he did in Venezuela was switch out one dictator that was unfriendly to Trump for a dictator who was friendly to Trump. And now apparently we're taking their oil, we're, you know, whatever. That's a different regional issue. Like I just, the extent to which this can go off the rails and get to a point where now America is under threat. Now, like there is a real, you know, there is a real shooting war going on between different countries. Like it's harder to just be like, and we're out now, especially because Israel won't want us out. Saudi Arabia won't want us out. And so this is just more complicated, I think, for him.
It's a sticky wicket. It's more complicated than Venezuela. I take your point, JVL, that just like in the past, you know, George W. Bush, when things started to get hinky in 2003, wasn't just going to be like, hey, I'm flying back to America. Good luck out there, Al-Qaeda.
My name is Paul.
ISIS.
That's between y'all.
Yeah, you guys figured out. He was never going to do that, right? Like for a whole variety of reasons. And maybe that is like a legitimate advantage that Trump has, that he has, he has more freedom to maneuver than people that are constrained by ideological concerns or constrained by humanitarian concerns or constrained by anything else, right? I agree with that. And he has more ability to maneuver. And where I would quibble with you is that I think this is already bad for him. Like if what you just laid out happens and we finish taping and 1 hour later Trump says, you know what, we're gonna bring home some of our ships. Good luck to Israel. Good luck to the people of Iran. You know, we're not going to go into the region anymore. And he comes back. Big win. Ayatollah, you know, Hossein Yola.
We got him. Now, he died like a dog.
Yeah, the old Ayatollah. We've replaced him with new Ayatollah. This guy seems great. He's more moderate. Not my cup of tea, exactly. Like that he has eight wives. Don't, you know, like, no. Like, he's not. He could do that, right? Yeah. I think he's still opened up a real fissure on his own side going into the election. I think the fact that anybody died, that we wasted any money over there, has created a real fissure on his own side. It's a talking point now that the left and Democrats can use against MAGA forever, no matter what happens from here into the future. Even if Iran turns out great, I think it's still a negative talking point for them. Like, even if he stays around for a couple of weeks, and you know, who the hell knows? Whatever the dream scenario is for Iran, where it rejoins the community of nations and it's a G20 country anymore, and they start doing trade, you know, I don't know, and we kill all of the Iranian National Guard people, and you know, whatever, Tehran blossoms. Like, even in that case, like, he still now became the person that was embroiled over there, lost American lives, lost our treasure, got his eye off the ball of caring about America's economy. And, you know, so that wouldn't be a disaster for him. He still would survive it. And who the hell knows what shenanigans he has in mind for the midterms or for the end of his term, right? So, you know, we were joking in the Slack before this about what to title this live stream. And Sarah was like, it's curtains for Trump. And it's like, no, it's not curtains for Trump because of Iran. But like this hurt. In all of the various potential outcomes, even the best case one, I think, creates some political issues for that. Maybe minor ones, maybe modest ones that don't end up mattering that much in the long term. But I think it's a real, like, he's in a bad place with it.
Did you not get my joke about Trump talking about the dead Americans and then immediately asking people to look at the curtains? That's what I was talking about.
It's curtains for Trump.
Wow.
I didn't. That's nice. That's really good. We should have done that.
You.
The picture of curtains. Well, can we still do that? Can we change? Can we change
apparently
this
Apparently it wasn't self-evident enough for you guys to get.
So. I still like it, though.
So I believe
for Trump.
J.D. Vance is put in a very tough spot here, as evidenced by the fact that our shit poster, you know, America's preeminent shit poster has gone dark. And
he was on Jesse Waters last night.
He has tried to make it clear that he was against it, But then when he was for it, it was to go very big and very fast. And he's trying to square the circle of I'm with Tucker on all that stuff. But also I'm with Donald Trump in our beautiful relationship with Israel.
Yeah.
Did you guys read the New York Times TikTok of everything that happened? And, yeah. Because it's a really good piece. But one of the telling things is the fact that they consulted Tucker. He came to the White House 3 times.
Sure.
And so like Tucker was basically making the anti case. And I just was like, this is how we're doing war. This is how we're doing war now.
Did you expect anything less?
No, I mean, whatever. But just to Tim's point about like, it's a problem for him. Again, going back to things that like really split the coalition.
Hold on. It is funny that Tucker is who they brought in and not their director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard.
Right.
I wonder what she's up to.
Hey, B&I,
she's up to.
She's just living the spirit of aloha. Like, do you think she goes into the office, Ethan?
I can't believe she hasn't resigned. I mean, this is how you know these are not people of principle. If Tulsi Gabbard had the courage of her convictions, she'd be long gone, even before this, but certainly now. But instead, she just, disappears.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Tucker coming in, and he's the one being consulted on this.
You know, if you take me off my path, I'm never getting back there.
Why don't we go to the ad? It'll give Sarah some time to think about her path. We have a new sponsor. It's our friends at Upwork. Scaling a business takes the right expertise at the right time. Upwork helps. I'm scrolling. So what does Upwork help me do? Upwork helps growing teams. That's us. Quickly bring in specialized freelancers so you can move faster and take business to the next level. Get it?
Ding, ding, ding.
Upwork is a one-stop platform to find, hire, and pay expert freelancers across web and software development, data and analytics, marketing, business operations, and more. They help grow your business by giving you fast access to specialized talent. So you can fill skill gaps, launch projects faster, and scale support up or down. Without committing to a full-time headcount, you can browse profiles, review past work, and get help scoping the role so you can hire with confidence and get started quickly. With Business Plus, you can add access to top 1% of talent on all of Upwork, and you'll get matched to the right freelancer in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com. Did you come up with it, Sarah?
No, but I'm just going to make one quick different point, which is that the other thing in that New York Times article that was pretty interesting was that clearly there had been weeks of going back and forth, which also kind of undermines this idea that it was such an imminent threat that they couldn't go to Congress, which I will say this is just a point of analysis that there's not really much to do with. But, you know, there's a lot of talk about the War Powers Act and people having a vote on this. And I this is one where like it sort of doesn't matter because number one, I don't think they'd get enough people to approve it. And number two, Trump can just veto it. And like number three, like it's already happened. Like he's already gone to like it's done. And so what would they even do other than almost symbolically force him to consult them? So I think that for people who are sort of frustrated by the war powers of it all, there's not much there that can be done. At this point, it is a public, to me, it's a public opinion play at this point. Oh, I was going to say something about Megyn Kelly. Now I remember what it was, but go ahead, Tim.
Make a little Megyn Kelly note. If it makes you feel any better, Sarah, when JBL asked us for our initial thoughts at the beginning of the podcast, I had something I was really excited about. It was a good little riff. And then you started talking and I started talking and then I lost it. And it's been bugging me the whole podcast. I was like, what was I going to say?
You still not know?
I still don't know. It was going to be magical. This content was going to be so good. But whatever. It'll just be, we'll keep it. If I come up with it after the podcast is over, we'll share it just for Bulwark Plus members. So subscribe today. I was going to say the vote matters for this reason. I interviewed Ruben Gallego today. He'll be out here in a couple hours. I thought he was really good. And it's important for, I think, the Democrats to demonstrate the scale of their opposition to this as a political matter. And I think that it is that ties to a limiting principle. There's a legal limiting principle. Will he actually follow the 90-day limit? If this war goes past 90 days, he's got a whole shitload of other problems to deal with. And then if he wants to break the law too, like, I agree with you. Like, there's some limits on how they can control a lawless administration for sure. But, you know, there was a, we were talking at the top about like how there hasn't been this rally around Trump effect. There was an email from Political Scientist that listens to us and follows us. They're like, if you look historically, like, rally around the flag effects happen like when you're attacked on your homeland, or where there's some reason that you're rallying around a person, or when the out party and like leaders from the out party are aligned, right? Like when they're signaling from the leaders. And I think that the fact that there's been like, what, I think five Democrats kind of softly talking about how maybe they'd support the War Powers Act. And I think the fact that the overwhelming majority of Democratic electeds are signaling no to this does put some kind of restraints on his abilities, I think.
Maybe. I'm skeptical that if push came to shove, I do think you'd see a handful of Democratic defections on this.
I'm sure you would too. But, which would be crazy. Don't do it.
More than a handful.
I think so too. That's why I like. I bet that's why.
Dems, I think it's good for us to know.
Alyssa Slotkin, I've got my eye on you.
I think it's good for us to know. You know, it's good for us to know because it's important to know what time it is.
Sometimes you don't want to know. Sarah, give me your Megyn Kelly thing, and then we got to move on.
This was going back to the splitting the coalition conversation, which is like, it is worth right now following the intra MAGA discourse, because there was a funny thing from our friend Scott Jennings, who posted, and this just goes back to like people trying to get really good information out of what's happening. It is really difficult right now, and lots of people are like posting garbage, and we're not getting clean accounts of a whole bunch of things. But Scott Jennings posted something where like someone from the administration had called him and said, I can't even remember what the thing
was. Mass casualty event. There was going to be a mass casualty event,
right? This is where you get to the conflicting stories, but like they're sending people out who are their administration mouthpieces to put things in the ether. I mean, Scott posted this with sirens, and it was like, then it was totally undercut. It was totally
by
turned
CNN's
out not to be
own
true.
Reporting.
Yeah, by CNN's own reporting, it turned out
and
to
yet
be
CNN
false.
Keeps putting Scott on the air to help inform their viewers and give them a better picture of the world. Which
that really
is why
shameless.
It is broken.
Yeah, that really is a shameless problem. But Megyn Kelly was criticizing Scott Jennings on this point by saying, she's like, look, I talk to people in the administration too, but I'm not just going to like dumbly repeat everything they said. But like, there are big mouthpieces right now who often rush to the side of the administration who are not, because the podcast listening base of MAGA that supports it, these are the people who are anti-war. They're also the people who were pro getting the Epstein files out. And so you are starting to, I think, erode some of that base with things like this.
And it was core. It is worth doing a little history lesson for, because some people, you know, really came into the Trump era and started paying attention to news like when he beat Hillary, or like during the debate season in the general election, because they're like, really? Trump is going to be the fucking president? And so like not everybody might remember the dog days of the primary like I do. So I'm going to trigger myself right now. Like, Trump's core offering to Republican primary voters was, one, these guys are a bunch of cucks and wusses that don't have the balls to beat up criminals and deport illegals, right? Like, so there was this kind of machismo, authoritarian stuff on immigration and crime. But the other thing was, he's like, they're also so stupid and they all sent you to these stupid wars and I wouldn't do it. And he was in South Carolina. I was there on stage where he was like, it was Bush's fault that 9/11 happened. And yeah, there was chatter in that room. As late as the South Carolina primary, there's chatter in the spin room afterwards that like, boy, did Trump really hurt himself today? Like, the Republican base might have turned on the Iraq war, but they're not ready to go all the way to like, it's Bush's fault that Iraq
Bush lied us into it.
And that Bush, yeah, and that 9/11 was happened on Bush Watt. He was asleep at the switch. And maybe even there's some questions about what happened there. 9/11 world conspiracy theories. Maybe it was an inside job, right? Like, Trump did, and everyone else on the stage condemned him.
And won by 20.
And right. Yeah, and he wins South Carolina in a landslide. Okay, yeah. After Nikki Haley endorses Marco and all that, et cetera. So, like, the being opposed, like, if you'd been doing focus groups back then, I do think the light bulb that would have gone off for you listening to Republican voters is like, oh man, they like, I knew they were against the war, or tired of the war, but they're like mad at the establishment in a way that I don't know that a lot of us who are working on the campaigns fully realized. And that was our bad. Like, we were in our own bubble and we were wrong. And Trump was correct, whether it was instinctually or strategic, whatever, like he tapped into something. And this is like a real betrayal for some of those people. Like, this was the thing. And it would literally be like him doing amnesty. Like, there are only two things that like he offered them that were distinct. Like, I will deport the illegals and I'm not going to do the dumb Middle East wars.
I don't want to re-trigger you again, but
I remembered what I was going to say.
Jeb put out a video.
I know. Wait, Jeb put out a video.
Let him get this out before
we get to fucking Jeb in a second. This is why. This is going to be my hot take at the beginning. We're back around to it 45 minutes in.
Love it.
For this reason, this is why I really don't understand why Trump's doing it. And I like, there is like a deep, every time I say this, I have a lot of people replying to me and emailing to me like, Tim, it's obviously that he's like, BB has compromise on him on the Epstein files. And I'm like, I think with Trump's base, if they found out that he was raping 13-year-olds serially, I think that they would be more likely to forgive him for that than getting into a Middle East war quagmire. Like, I don't think it's compromise. I don't think it's a distraction from the Epstein files. Like, I don't, it's truly insane. It is like amnesty. Like, it is like Trump waking up one day and being like, we're going to do a big amnesty. You know, I've heard the complaints. Like, and that is like the thing that is really flummoxing about all of this. Like, why, like, he's going to risk this to keep his buddy BB and MBS happy? I guess. I just think it's really befuddling and stupid. Maybe he's just like a 12. He's 12 and he likes the fireworks and he's getting bored. I don't know.
I mean, doesn't recency bias suggest from his perspective that he can do anything he wants and it winds up okay?
Sure. But right. Why does he want to do this? He could also do anything. Like, literally invading Greenland makes way more sense to me than this. Like, if I had woken up on Saturday morning, you'd said Trump really did it. Like, the we got Marines on the ground in Nuke, and we've taken out somebody in the embassy. Right? Like, I would have been like, that's crazy as fuck, by the way. That's crazy. How do we live in this world? But, like, I get it. That is in line with Trump's.
Well, he'd at least been talking about that for a long period of time. He's gone through a whole series of making the case about why we do it, telling us there are mineral strategic objectives. Like, this is why those
right.
people were suddenly like, how can you guys not be on board? We're like, he has said nothing. Like, we haven't, he said the opposite of this the whole time. So we're sorry if we're skeptical about why he's doing this, or like not sure about the motives or the plan or anything else. This is not the same as when your American government says, hey, this thing happened. Like, we're good and we're taking these actions for reasons. Like, right. That's not what happened. He's retconning yeah. at a reason after we did the bombs. And they're all different reasons.
Thank you. All right. We had an entire section on Anthropic and the Department of Defense. I'm just going to cut that. We got to move on.
The people want to hear you just bash me over the head with the Jeb tweet, don't they? You're not going to give that to them?
I mean, I wasn't going to.
It's a little sadomasochism for the audience, if you
Jeb,
want.
Jeb put out a video praising the Brave Historic Operation, whatever this one is, Warhammer 2000, and
Eternal Freedom 69.
So I'm glad that Jeb Bush finally decided to come out of his hole when something happened where he felt like he could praise Trump. Wouldn't want to say anything when it might be taken as criticism, but anyway, that's all.
Keep it coming.
I didn't see Jeb Bush's tweet.
Yeah, I mean, you know. He's wanted to
video, overthrow. Sarah. It's a video.
He's wanted to overthrow the Iranian regime for a long time. So at least if Jeb was president and we took out the Ayatollah, yeah. he would have had a case made. You know, he had a long track record of arguments.
Maybe Jeb could wait till it turns out okay before, like, you know. Because if Iran turns into Libya, that's not better.
Yeah.
Right? It's different, but it's not better.
Filing a disagreement with my former boss on this one.
Okay. We were going to talk about Anthropic. We're not going to talk about Anthropic. We're going to talk very...
But they're great. They're better than OpenAI. They're not great, actually. But if you have to pick...
Good enough.
The better so far.
Cancel your ChatGPT, sign up for Claude. That's what I did. We are going to talk about the Texas primary tonight, live again. Three of us together again. It's amazing. So we're going to put that to the side right now. I want to talk. So, Sarah, you and I very briefly talked about Graham Plattner in Secret Show, and you kind of won me over in the moment. But then over the course of the weekend, I saw, I think, another like Nazi thing with Plattner. And I just thought, I'm sorry. Like, how many times?
I won you over what? I think Graham Plattner's not good. I think
no, but you made
but,
the case.
But the voters, but just in terms of what voters want.
Right. You made the case that voters want him, not Mills, in that he's still preferable to Susan Collins, which I think I agree on, because who isn't preferable to Susan Collins? And that it's basically okay. Like you could replace, it can be like a Fetterman. It can be a one and done.
Sarah's going to do an ad. I think I'm going to surprise people by being the most pro Plattner person on the panel. So I want to make that case after the ad, and then Sarah and you can
read. While she's doing her read, Tim, go look at some questions. Because we are going to take questions from you guys, the audience.
Okay, let me do my ad here. Guys, it's for OneSkin. We've talked before about why OneSkin really stands out as a skincare company. It's not hype or just fancy packaging. It's real science. The founding team are longevity researchers who asked a deceptively simple question. If many visible signs of aging, like wrinkles, fine lines, and loss of elasticity, are driven by so-called zombie cells, what if you could actually reduce those cells to slow the aging process down instead of just covering it up? The research led to OS1, OneSkin's proprietary peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off those damaged cells, actually slowing skin aging directly at the source. There's a lot going on right now, and we're all doing our best. You don't have to let this horror show moment in our politics age your skin 25 years. There's plenty to be worried about. Worry line shouldn't be on that list. That's why I just sit here every day, and I just go like this. I just do this because my forehead just wrinkles constantly. OneSkin's products are backed by extensive lab and clinical data, including 4 peer-reviewed clinical studies to validate their efficacy and safety on all skin types. Plus, they've got over 10,000 five-star reviews and have been recently featured by Bloomberg as a leader in skin longevity. It really shows you don't need a complicated routine to achieve healthier, younger-looking skin. Born from over a decade of longevity research, OneSkin's OS1 peptide is proven to target the visible signs of aging, helping you unlock your healthiest skin now and as you age. For a limited time, try OneSkin with 15% off using code THENEXTLEVEL at OneSkin.co/THENEXTLEVEL. That's 15% off OneSkin.co. It's my OneSkin with code THENEXTLEVEL. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Thanks, OneSkin. Did I get all that?
You did. I'm sorry. I was distracted because G Money is at my door going, "Hey, Dad, can I play pinball while you're taping?"
Let him in during the Q&A.
No, hey, G Money. You can't come in and play pinball while we're taping.
Here's my case for Graham Plattner.
Go ahead.
And then we'll hear your rebuttals. I want to start by saying this. I think that if I was in Maine personally, under my own and had my own vote, and I was just speaking for myself, and I was an analyst, I think I'd vote for Janet Mills. I'd probably do it holding my nose. And if it was the governor's race or a mayor's race, where it's just one person, it's an executive, they're running for mayor of my town, I would want the 79-year-old lady that has demonstrated herself to be a career public servant to like make sure the trash pickup is on time. That's not what this is, though. It's a national election for the U.S. Senate, and it is absolutely critical that the Democrats figure out how in the fuck to win working class white people if they ever want to have any power or control again. It's critical they figure it out. Is Graham Plattner the magic potion to that? We don't know, but it's worth a try. We know that Janet Mills is not. And I wish this was happening. I've said this a million times in Florida or Nebraska. I wish we were trying this out in a race that wasn't as important as the main race, but you know, wish, you know, we can't get our wishes in this world. Obviously, we all know that. And so we're in Maine. And my view on this, just one more thing, and I'll hear your rebuttal, is that, like, yeah, the tattoo seemed really dumb. Okay. Also, some of his Reddit posts are pretty mean, but I think if you went through my whole social media archive, you'd see some shit that's pretty, that, like, I had some pretty bad takes when I was 23. I have some bad takes now from time to time. The going on, the latest one, like, he went on a podcast with somebody that advanced a Charlie Kirk conspiracy. I'm kind of like, wait a minute. I thought we wanted the candidates to go on podcasts like this now. We're going to be mad about him going on this podcast because the guy had a crazy theory. It'd be one thing if you went on the podcast and Graham was like, hey, love your show, which he did say. I particularly love your Charlie Kirk takes. Or if the guy was like, hey, Graham, what do you think about my idea that Mossad really killed Charlie Kirk? And Graham was like, I'm interested in that. We don't know. We need to hear more investigation.
Tell me more.
That's not what happened. They didn't talk about Charlie Kirk on the podcast. They talked, everything he said on the podcast was normal. He quote tweeted Stu Peters, then he deleted it. Isn't that what we want people to do? You know what I mean? Maybe. Like,
I'd prefer them to not quote.
So I think that the word Nazi gets thrown around with him because he had the stupid tattoo and he also happened to do interviews with other guys that are Nazi-ish. Does anybody that's making that accusation actually think Graham Plantner is a Nazi? I don't think he's a Nazi. I think he's too far left for my taste, to be honest. I don't think he's a right-wing Nazi anti-Semite. If he turns out that we learn more, where he's advanced anti-Semitic views, we could reassess. But for now, it seems like the people want change. They want an outsider. He can speak to working class people that were Obama Trump voters, that were Bernie voters. And the Democrats need to figure out how to do that. And as far as I'm concerned, all of the complaints about him have been kind of ticky-tack. And I'm open to seeing more information as the primary goes on. But as of right now, for a Senate race, not a governor's race, I think Plantner. There you go. That's my case.
Yeah. And so I said something not quite as emphatic as you, but I think the conversation that JVL and I were having. So first of all, I was referencing the focus groups that I have done in Maine are so pro-Plantner, you wouldn't believe. And part of the reason is that, look, if you are Chuck Schumer and you don't want Plantner, like, the problem with Janet Mills is that it seems like nobody learned a lesson about 80-year-olds, which is that, you know, and like you can't do it right now. There's like nothing more triggering to voters at the moment than, oh my God, you're going to put an 82-year-old in office. Like, you can't do that. So they're like, I'll take the young guy who's doing direct camera. And a lot of the voters in the focus groups, they like Janet Mills. Like, they feel warmly toward her. They just think it's insane to put up an 80-year-old woman. And so I agree with that. That's the part where I'm like, that was the wrong choice if you wanted to sort of close out the primary. Second of all, the appetite for something new. And I also think people don't believe he's a Nazi. Like, they might, they know that there's some controversy, but like, nobody thinks there's like, they think Nick Fuentes is a Nazi. They think, you know, like, but like, they think Graham Plantner might have been an idiot when he was younger, which Graham Plantner talks about, right? And he sort of addresses these things. I will say for me, that if I were voting in Maine in that primary, I would probably have to vote for Janet Mills, partly just because I'm me and like, I can't, like,
you're a small C conservative. It's not even a conservative. It's just like, no, why take the risk? Like, the case for Mills is kind of like, we know she's been a fine governor, right? Like, it's the small C Edmund Burke conservative inside of you.
Yeah, it's the part of me that's like, and it's like, this is a really important seat. And it seems like, I'm glad all this stuff's coming out in the primary because if nothing else, at least the voters in Maine will choose eyes wide open what he is. I do think sort of there's a tendency, though, for people to be like, he might be another Fetterman. And that's the, like, you can't rely on him. And I think this is a weird thing. They're doing this to Talrico, too, where they were like, he'll be another Fetterman, which I don't think any of these guys, I think Fetterman's a very specific case. But if what you mean
he
is.
He had a stroke.
Yeah.
He got a lot dumber. Like, he lost some mental capacity. And then all of a sudden was overnight. MAGA arguments were making a lot more sense to him.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what his, I mean, we all know he had a stroke. I can't speak for everything that's happened to Fetterman, but I don't think that everybody needs to be like, suddenly everyone who has some, and now I'm not talking about any of the Nazi stuff. Now I'm just talking policy-wise, that somebody who is talking specifically to the working class and who has heterodox views about things, that they're automatically going to be another Fetterman. I actually think Plattner, sans a lot of the other stuff, is a pretty good model for a candidate. Like, I do think people should be experimenting with that. I would just struggle a little bit. At some point, Tim, there's the tattoo, and then there's like, you retweet Stu Peters because Stu Peters shows up in your algorithm, and like, you're looking at a lot of people like that. Like, it just feels, yeah, it's starting to feel a little weird. And so I would approach this with caution. Is my take.
Same.
Right now.
Same.
I'm not the biggest two things, there. Then we'll move on. I just would say that I have been saying from the very beginning, what if the answer to recapturing these voters is that you need candidates who suck? Yeah. Yeah. What if the answer is, well, we got to find some dumb people who believe crazy shit and have unsavory associations. And if we can just have them wear the blue t-shirt, that's how we get out of this fix. I personally would be more comfortable if we could just get out of it with like neoliberalism and competent technocrats.
Yeah.
I realize these are my own preferences, but this is like I'm laughing about it, but this is the problem of creating a popular front, is that you wind up having to hold hands with a bunch of people who...
There are only two parties in the country. I just want to say this. Right. Like, they're only, like, yeah, you need 70 million people to win, yep, in these days to win an election. And so there aren't 70 million technocrats, college-educated technocrats in the country, unfortunately. So you need some other people. And I guess my thing on Plattner is, I actually don't think that I will get this treatment in return from our friends like Sam Sater and some of the lefty guys on YouTube. I wish they would. We'll see. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't want to impugn on them. But like, at some point, I will be asking of people like, hey, on the left, like in a southern state, you might need a pro-life, pro-cop, I want to cut regulation Democrat, who's a young guy like Plattner and also said some weird things online and also has lefty. You know what I mean? Maybe you agree with them on anti-war stuff and he's a Democrat. You know, like, you got to try different shit. And Plattner's not going to be my cup of tea exactly, but it's at least he's doing something. It's resonating. He's doing something. Yeah.
We are also going to try taking some questions here live on the air.
Let's do it.
You're doing it.
Who wants to go first? I've chosen some JVL and Sarah and Tim questions. Who wants the first?
You're driving, man.
Yeah, give it to JVL. He's talked less than us.
Okay, JVL. On my JVL question list, I have, do you think this war, this is from Christine. Hey, Christine. Do you think war will provide cover for the Chinese to take Taiwan? Do you think this affects the Chinese calculus at all?
No. To the extent, so the serious answer is China is probably doing some reassessment, looking at how their anti-aircraft defenses have been defeated. They're probably also happy about seeing how many anti-missile munitions the United States is expending. And they are also probably realizing they don't need to take Taiwan. The whole world is realigning to their specifications anyway.
Our friend Pat Kenke, over there, also on YouTube, we met him in Minnesota, had a question for JVL, which is, he'd love to hear your Catholic thoughts on this through the just war theory.
No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't. We're not going to do just war theory here on this.
We're not doing
just trying to have theory? A popular show, which lots of people watch and listen to.
The people want to hear your thoughts on just war theory.
No, believe me, people want to hear more thoughts about vampire economics than they want to hear Catholic just war
theory. You're refusing.
Refuse.
Okay. Well, then we'll go.
Not an ask me anything, are you?
We'll go to a Tim question then, which is more fun. Omar Rejecto asks, what's the worst call? Trump invades Iran or Nico trades Luca? Boy, Nico got protested at his own office. You know you've done something bad in sports if you're a general manager and you make a decision and, you know, you're in sports. Usually you've everybody likes you. Like, you have a cool job. You run the sports team. And then you drive and you park in your nice spot right by the stadium and you go out and people are like, have signs that are like, death to Nico. You know, you did a really bad job. Trump, I don't think that's happened for Trump yet. So I think Nico worse than Trump so far. But if Iran gets worse, it could be, it could, Trump could pass Nico for worst management. Sarah, I've got for you Alex Kubasek. Does average Joe American really care about foreign policy when they don't even know where Iran is on a map?
This is a great question, because they do not care about like the theories of foreign policy, and they will get bored with lots of foreign policy. I think there's a reason that in America, after Trump took out Maduro and we get a new dictator, Americans like totally checked out of that. Like everybody just stops talking about Venezuela. I don't think people are going to proactively go in search of foreign policy. Once we're in a hot war and we're dropping bombs and we're sending American troops, they care for a while and they get really upset about it. And then, I mean, that's why when we talk about the Bush line, it is George W. Bush left office with a 32% approval rating. Why? Because people felt like the war in Iraq was a failure. And so that, and nothing more, nothing was driving his, that was like before the market crashed. So nothing, I would say being in a hot war and having a shitty economy, by the way, which is like, but like you put those two things together and that's where things start to really matter to people.
It's tax season. And by now I know we're all a bit tired of numbers, but here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. Here's another one. One in four honest, hardworking, taxpaying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, backed by another good number. The $1 Million Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your money back. Don't face identity theft and financial losses alone. There's strength in numbers with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection for tax season and beyond. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Pretty funny. My buddy over the Tennessee holler, Justin Canoe, went outside of like the House, Tennessee House Republicans lunch or whatever. And they're coming out. He had a big map and was asking them to point to where Iran is on the map. And like one of the fucking rednecks walks over there with confidence. He's like, I got this, and points right at Iraq. So good. Nailed it. Okay. This one's for everybody because I don't know how it didn't make it to our show outline. It's from Steph P. Why did Kash Patel fire FBI members of C-12, the unit that is focused on Iranian intelligence? Last week, he did that. Not last year in the initial purge. Last week.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. Like, the answer is either Kash Patel is a moron. Like, I'm not sure how we have a lot of very stupid people in this administration. It's very ironic that J.D. Vance goes around and being like, well, you know, that was dumb presidents before, but now we've got this smart president. You know who can't find Iran on a map? Trump. Donald Trump can't find Iran on a map. But I don't know why he did it unless I'm just going to put on secret pod rules. I'm totally speculating. But if there were people who were pushing back, like as they were doing the negotiations, as they were talking about these interventions, and they knew they had people internally who were opposed to this for reasons that they had intelligence or whatever, and they got rid of them. That's what they've done over at DOJ. Like they've just basically gotten rid of anybody who disagrees with what the administration's policy might be. So that's possible.
It's great.
So I can tell you.
And, go. Did you let me answer if you not, know?
Well, because this is unconfirmed. This is rumored. But the word on the Strasse is that the trip to Milan for the Olympics, the Olympic stuff was all cover. He was meeting some intelligence sources there, which suggested that the Iranian counterterrorism unit within the FBI itself had been penetrated. And so he needed to, the whole thing about like, oh, look at me, I'm just chugging beers with my buds.
That deep was all cover.
That's a PSYOP.
It was PSYOP because what he was really doing was figuring out where the moles were. And that's why he cleaned them out. Because otherwise, maybe the terrorism would have come from the Iranian plants within the FBI.
All right, last
I can't believe the FBI is still functioning without Dan Bongino.
Me neither. Last thing, we had a, well, Doug asked about Trump's bleed, about whether we have enough munitions. I talked to Mark Hertling about that. It's going to be publishing in like 2 hours, Doug, so take a look for that. Hertling's better to answer that question than any of us. Here's my last one for JVL. I think, Sarah, if you have any thoughts on this, because, but it is curious, which is how the corruption ties into all of this. Like the relationship that Trump and Kushner built with Saudi Arabia and the UAE, it seems like this war puts a damper on that. And if you're going to be building hotels and casinos and racetracks in the Middle East, do you want drones landing everywhere? How do you, can you make sense at all about the corrupt business dealings that Trump has in the Middle East and how that's impacting the decision making right now?
Do you want to go first, Sarah?
I don't know the answer to this.
Okay. It is, in retrospect, totally unsurprising that the area of the world in which Trump feels the most comfortable operating is the Middle East. And that's because his own view of leadership, state sovereignty, and power mirrors precisely how things are in the Middle East, where they're run by ruling families. They're dynastic. There is no popular sovereignty. And the will of the monarch is indistinguishable from the interests of the state. That is precisely how he sees the presidency and how he views his own relationship with America. And so he's able to be completely transactional with them. And it is not, you know, and they understand the same thing. They look at him and they see a guy who they're like, yes, I can do business with this guy. We'll give him a plane. We'll push a few $100 million in through his crypto. Like this is, you know, then and then MBS is able to say, hey, Iran scares the shit out of us. And it's right there. It's right over there. Could you please do something about this? Baby will hold hands with you. And this is a big part of it. It's just gangsterism. Right. This is, you know, it's pure gangsterism and it's all about his own interests. The weakness is that if you did get somebody in like the IRGC who came out of this and was clever enough to say, all right, I'm going to find some way to put some money in this guy's pocket, which is what Delcy Rodriguez did. They could get to a pretty OK place. They let him declare victory. They say, oh, yes, the great American father had, you know, really, he showed us. He showed us. And here's nine million barrels of oil. And please go on your way, crypto. Mr. Trump. Right. And then, you know, 10 years from now, they have the watches. We have the time.
Tierra. That was from her. Thank you for that question. That's it. That's the show. We'll see you guys tonight.
Buy some tickets in Austin. We still have a few tickets left in Austin, Texas. Go to thebulwark.com/events. Come join us.
Guys, it's weird that we sold out Dallas before Austin. Obviously, Austin's a much bigger venue, but let's go. I bet JVL, a pinball machine that we sure sell out. So don't put me on the hook for a pinball machine. Don't do it. Go get your tickets. Come
or
see us in Austin.
Maybe skip us. Just watch the replay on the internet and let me get a pinball machine.
Stop talking to people out of coming to the
come
show.
Come to Austin. We're live tonight at 9 o'clock-ish Eastern. Yep. Keep an eye on the feed. Yeah.
Guys, good show. Incredibly long show. Live show. We'll be back together again tonight.
Great.
Good luck, America.
It's tax season, and by now, we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money and refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it. Guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.